This is the Toddcast Podcast. I'm a guy named Todd.
And I'm a guy named Eric. Join in our conversation as we discuss anything
and everything.
Pointless debates.
Music. Star Wars.
Nerd culture.
And so much more. There are no scripts.
No show notes. Commuters, sit back and enjoy the ride.
The Toddcast Podcast starts now. Hello and welcome to the Toddcast. Another edition of Band Book Club. We've got the gang all here. We've got Eric hanging out.
Hello, everyone.
And we've got executive producer / avid reader Abby with us. Hi, Abby.
Hi, Todd. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Abby.
So, 1984 is our selection of the month, because what this world needs is more dystopia.
Todd, we're just talking about the year I was born. That's what we're doing. The wonderful year of 1984, regardless of whatever this book is. Let's just veer away and just talk about the greatest year of all time. But
are we Trojan horsing our own podcast, Eric?
We are now Trojan horse. Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds great.
It's on brand.
We'll talk about George Orwell's 1984 book in general, which is, I mean, it's always been popular for me just because, because of the whole year I was born thing. I always looked at it and said, oh, I should read that, And we finally got around to reading it, per se, and that is air quotes reading, audiobook reading. So I had nice British man.
That counts.
Yeah, I think it counts. And I personally think it added flavor to it because I had a British man who reminded me of what Winston Smith would sound like. So how did you guys consume this book? Same situation.
I had an audiobook from the library.
So I'm the only person who's physically read this book. I mean, and then recently I listened to the audiobook, but I actually read this probably in the early 2000s. This again falls into the category of, this is one of those books that was required reading
at least
one of the years that I was in school. Possibly it was on the selection list multiple times, but young Todd was not having any of that. Why would I read your dystopia when I can read this, you know, trashy cyberpunk novel from the Shadowrun RPG line instead? And yeah, it was like the early 2000s, I got on a kick to be like, you know, I should probably read some of these books just to see what it's all about. And I had a paperback copy that actually belonged to our father.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
That sat on my shelf for quite a while. And I'm like, you know what? I should read this. And I did. And, you know, there's not many things in this life that I regret.
Oh, no.
But I was immediately unhappy upon completing this novel. But I guess that's what dystopians are for. What were your initial reactions, thoughts, feelings, Eric?
So I did not mind the book. I primarily listened to it on Saturdays while I was cleaning my garage. So just for the backdrop of like this is when I listened to it. Yeah, the book itself was, I think it's a one and done, right? So
right.
I do not think it's one that I need to listen to or read for enjoyment, but I also think it is necessary, and there was enlightening moments in this that I was like, I am glad I listened to this because it's a good way to like think about things. Like it explore through, I mean, it's kind of widen your horizon. I guess that is a good idea for books in general, is to enlighten you in many aspects. Right. So I feel, but I don't think I'd be like, you know what? I need to read that again. As opposed to the prior book that we did, To Kill a Mockingbird, I think there was more narrative, there were more story, there were more elements that made me say I could listen to that again because it was more of an enjoyable listen, read, where this was like, all right, I know how it ends. I know how it goes. And mind you, I had no spoilers going into this. So I literally had no idea how this was going to start and any of the above. I had zero information, which was helpful because you were at least kind of on the edge of your seat to say, all right, when's the shoe going to drop? What's going to happen here? So I did not dislike this book, but it won't be one that is going to be like a repeatable action. What's your thoughts, Abby?
Well, in the interest of full disclosure, I did read this as a teenager because it was required by my fundamentalist homeschool mother, which is very bizarre to me.
A little bit, especially since this book kind of says some of the quiet parts out loud vis-a-vis religion and so forth.
He also had me read Brave New World, but that's a conversation for a different day. At any rate, I had like zero memory of this book. It was so non-impactful to me in my extremely early teens. And I think because I didn't have, you know, enough knowledge of the world and kind of framework for this book. And so reading it now, I found the book to be more impactful than I did, you know, when I was 12 or whatever. I don't hate it the way that Todd seems to, but I find it very depressing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and I guess, and that's the thing. Like, the first time I read it, like I said, it would have been the early 2000s, right? And I went into it not knowing anything. Like, I knew what I guess everybody probably knows, you know, Big Brother, some sort of surveillance situation. It's a dystopia. Go. And so I read the thing. And like I said, early 2000s. So we're talking Bush presidency, the war in Iraq, fun stuff like that. So, you know, reading the book and the themes of, you know, ongoing war and the propaganda nonsense and stuff, it was a little too topical for me. And then, you know, I'll just go ahead and say spoiler warning here, people. Like, this does not have a happy ending. Like, I've read dystopias before, and it's like, yeah, the world is bad and it's not great and things have really gone off the rails. But eventually our hero perseveres and da 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 da. And you do not get that. And that really kind of bummed me out. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a part of me that when I first read this was like, this is over the top. This could never happen. And by the way, it's also a downer because, you know, everyone loses in the end. When the reread, that this is unreasonable, shifted into, this is a little too close to reality for my tastes. And I don't envision a third pass through of this happening in my lifetime, if I can help it. Maybe if there was a decent movie, I would watch it just to see how they handled it, how they did it. But yeah, I'm good.
Right. I think that so, but I do. That's my main thing is like, yes, as a downer, as you want, I kind of, I can't compare it to a sad song, right? Like, because sad songs seem to be a little bit more enjoyable because there's music involved, but it is one of those things where it's probably wise to have some books, you know, stories that have these unfortunate endings because it is real life in many aspects, right? Like, we can't all be super happy that everything went the way it did.
That's fair.
But you also don't necessarily want to put yourself in harm's way. Like, it's like hanging out with negative people. It's like, yeah, we need them for contrast every now and then. You need to go around and be like, yeah, my life's not that bad. Or, hey, you know, I might be grumpy and yelling at the clouds, but at least I'm not miserable all the time. And then you kind of go it off, and it's reading a book like this at least says, well, you know, the fact is, yeah, sometimes the heroes don't win, and sometimes there are scenarios where it's just very dark. And so it makes you appreciate the ones that are light, you know, because if everything's, you know, happy and go lucky and everything, then we're just falling right into this whole, you know, newspeak situation, which
right,
sure.
So overall, just for those, I don't understand why you'd be listening to this, but if you have not read, you correct. Big Brother is essentially the authority. I thought it was kind of interesting how they made like new. I'm trying to figure out these while I'm listening. I'm trying to figure out Oceania is like the new Europe, I'm guessing. Is that kind of how that sounds?
Yeah.
Right. And they basically have these new new countries, and they have a government that essentially is watching them at all times. They created their new way of like almost a new language where they just start eliminating unnecessary words and making it to the point where there is no really free thought, free reading. And then there's parts of the government or parts, there's jobs that are essentially just censoring stuff and reorganizing. And if you know, major parts of the entire book is, hey, we were at war with these guys. And then we weren't at war with these guys, but you wouldn't know that because we stripped the history and rewrote all this stuff. And it was kind of crazy, but very well thought out. And I kept on thinking to myself, George Orwell really thought this out well. Like, there weren't any like major notions where I was like, man, that was a little far stretch. It was a systematic, like, he thought of a world and he built a world in which it was realistic that it could get to that point. Did you guys agree with that, or do you think there were some moments where you're like, huh, now that's too far-fetched?
I would like to think that he wrote this in sort of a mindset of, okay, what's the worst that could happen? If we take some of this, well, I mean, you take some totalitarian, you know, regime nonsense and the kind of, I mean, he was around for World War II.
Like, right.
He saw how the Nazis came to power and how their propaganda worked. And it seems to me he's like, let's just keep this going along that trajectory and see how bad it gets to see what that looks like. I'm just sad that it seems like some people almost have taken it like an instruction manual rather than a warning sign is the part that upsets me the most in our modern era.
Yeah, no, you'd like it to be a cautionary tale and not a how to run a country.
Or how to try and control your society, I guess. And this is the piece that really just kind of stuck into my side with a sharp pain is, you know, they're talking about all this censorship and we're just going to make it so you don't know what's real. We're going to tell you what we think it's real and you're just going to do it. And the department responsible for this is the Ministry of Truth, which peddles nothing but lies. We're going to call it the Ministry of Truth. And then, you know, you flip from your audiobook app over to the news app, and you hear that a certain someone is spouting utter nonsense on something called Truth Social, and the parallels just get a little too eerie for me. Mm-hmm. Just saying.
Right. No, it's crazy. You know, I'm hoping nobody takes it as their guidebook, but it is realistic that, in my opinion, I was like, all right, well, I could see how this would work if you eliminated, you know, the ability to create records. At this point in time, I mean, there's lots of stuff out there that's been so long, you know, and I've criticized things before. It's just like, yeah, after the several 20 rewrites, I mean, how much of the truth is still there of the original, you know, book or story? Right. And you could see how if you actually had someone in charge that were actively trying to erase this stuff, how dangerous and scary it could be. And or we as a society can be very brainwashed and not even realize it sometimes just through, you know, the years of tradition or whatever it would be. So the book itself is lots of things in there. But I was curious about George Orwell in general. This is a guy that I've heard his name before. And correct me if I'm wrong, he actually shows up twice on our banned book club for the year. Is that correct?
Oh, that's
correct.
What was the other book that he had?
Animal Farm.
Okay. Which I do recall a little bit of that. And so these books were kind of in the 40s, 50s? Does that sound?
40s.
Yeah, okay. Late 40s, post-World War II.
Yep.
So, do we know anything about good old George Orwell? Is that his two things of success, or were there more, or what do we know about this guy?
Those were the two biggies. You know, I didn't really know a whole lot about him until Craig did some research. Did not know that he shares your name, actually. George Orwell, I would have assumed, was his real name. That's a pen name.
Oh, okay.
He's another Eric.
Oh, there we go. Who knew?
Eric Arthur Blair.
Okay.
Born June 25th, 1903, in India, no less.
Well, interesting. Well, I did not take it for that. So he started writing.
He started writing, I think, like in the 30s, and he did some nonfiction initially that was focused on like poverty, homelessness, working class living conditions. So you can see how somebody who's writing nonfiction about that ultimately ends up turning to fiction of a cautionary tale of government out of control. I think that's kind of a natural arc.
Right, right. So, so here's the funny thing that I just recognized is that if 1984 came out in 1949, right? So that was, you know, the far, far distant future.
Right.
George died in 1950 at 46.
Yeah.
So that is a major reason why probably Animal Farm came out in 1945. 1984 was in 1949. And I'm throwing out a lot of numbers here and getting really confused real quick.
Yeah. I was told there would be no math.
Right. No. So, no, but needless to say, he died 1 year after 1984 came. So he did not see probably much of the success because I imagine books, you know, take a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. He passed on. So there were no follow-ups. There was no 1985 or 86 or even 1990, not until Prince came around and there was a 1999, that we saw anything more. But overall, it sounds to me like, I mean, this book and Animal Farm did make some pretty big impactful things. So that's where his name continues to kind of live on in this aspect. Yep. So when this was written, you know, in the 40s, I'm not a World War guy. Like, I don't remember the dates of World War II, you know, and or one for that matter. But it sounds to me like you mentioned it earlier was a lot about the Nazis and how that kind of worked. How do you think that impacted this entire book?
It was Nazis and the rise of the Russian end of things, the Stalinist communist fun times is really what a lot of it goes back to, both Animal Farm and 1984. Because again, he was around for World War II, but I guess he was more exposed to or familiar with like the Soviet Union superpower situation as it rose. And that influenced a lot of what he had going on.
Yeah, and that's tough for me because I don't know much about it, right? So I mean, everybody knows, or I should say most people know through Hollywood, the Nazi regime, right? You know, I don't know too much of it, but the fact is when you say propaganda, immediately, and it might be, Mabby, you might be in the same boat as a graphic designer, you immediately just see a giant propaganda picture in your brain, like a giant poster with a leader in like a three-tone color or something like that, with dark blacks. Like, so my, I don't know what you guys picture, but that's kind of like how I pictured when I'm listening to this damn book was in black and white in a movie in my head, right? Like I'm just,
oh yeah.
It's a combination of, I mean, it would be like the part of the Hunger Games, mm-hmm. but like in black and white and done, you know, many years ago. Like that's how I just envisioned everything. And then of course, when he's starting to be enlightened and having all his sexual escapades with his girlfriend or whatever in an antique shop, I'm like, all right, maybe we get some colors there, you know, and so forth.
Yeah.
From a Cold War or Russian like aspect, do you guys have any background knowledge that you can kind of explain a little bit more? Because I get the Nazi aspect, but the Cold War situation, was it very similar to the Nazis or is it a little different?
So it wasn't genocidal in the way that the Nazi regime was.
Okay.
The Stalinists weren't trying to take out an entire population of people, but it was very brutal, very authoritarian, lots of censorship, lots of people suffering. I think it would be very similar in a lot of ways.
Well, that's what it sounds like, yeah. So it sounds to me like this book was more of like, you know, there was murder mentioned multiple times in this book. People would just disappear and then not care about mm-hmm. it and stuff. But it wasn't this mass like, hey, we dislike an entire race or we're going to go take on. It was more of like, we just want control and want to brainwash you, which is
right.
1984 in a nutshell, right?
Kind of. Yeah.
Okay.
If you're not already on our side, we're going to do everything we can to get you on our side. And if that doesn't work, we're going to make fucking sure.
Okay. All right. Well, so it does mirror kind of what a real life, which I wouldn't have known, you know, just not paying much attention to that part of the war. You know, my part of the war is always like Captain America fighting, you know, like I'm like, that's sure. That's what I,
well, yeah. Here's the thing is I think that's what most people learn more about, because the idea is, okay, let's talk about the Nazis so that we don't repeat this. And everybody just kind of says, oh, yeah, Russia's bad. Don't do what Russia does. And they don't really dig in on that.
Right. Well, I wouldn't know. And that seems just as dangerous in a, you know, it's not as glorified from a newspaper or tabloid aspect. Like, of course, you know, mass murdering a race is way more radical sounding, but yet the censorship and just in general.
Current day Russia. Let's just say this. Putin's enemies disappear or end up poisoned or whatever. He controls the news. He controls who can come into the country and perform. He imprisons people who are counter to him. He just, quote unquote, won the least democratic election in the world's history. And so it's happening right now in Russia. Like, it's the same thing.
And for those that are listening, that was Jane Smith. I am John Smith with John Smith. So, just in case, just in
Listen,
case.
there's on the air. Todd knows it. He knows where the bail money's kept.
All
Like,
right, that's right.
this is it is a thing.
No,
I'm
well, that's this is why I think this book is important, right? So regardless if we like it, don't like it, I think reading a fiction book that describes what could very well be done should be part of, I wouldn't say required reading because that didn't work out well for all of us. It should be part of a banned book club in which we talk about it on a podcast. And since we've got that far, let's talk about why it was indeed banned and how it made it on our list in general.
Sure.
Right off the get-go, I will tell you, I could see the sexual content aspect. When I knew my son was reading this last year, I think in high school, and had to do stuff, I'm like, oh, well, this is great. Just from a standpoint, I don't have to talk about that. We'll just take care of it. They took care of it for me. So I could see that being the case, that you should be of a certain age before that is, you know, and truthfully, anybody that had to read that aloud in class, the blushing was more so than the skin of Mr. Winston's maiden. So I'll throw that out there first. That's the first reason why I could see someone wanting to ban that, but it's not the worst in the world. What else do you guys have?
I think on that aspect, if this were to get released today, I don't think anyone would bat an eyelash. But coming out in
Oh,
1949,
sure.
just the concept of you know, getting together with a woman and you're not married is, you know, scandal abounds, and I could see that being a problem.
I'm going to say that if it came out today, it would be a problem. How many idiot parents have we seen line up in Florida to
Well,
say, I object to the use of the word pussy in this book or whatever? Again, I'm just the harbinger of doom. I'm just here to tell you as often as possible that our reality is horrible and it's headed down the wrong path. That is why I'm here at Banner today.
Hey, well, I'm glad you took that spot in the class to let us know. We're all slightly grumpy. If you listen to most of our episodes on daylight savings time, you'll join in
Well,
the club.
that's right. But no, I think a lot of the other reasons that it was banned, ironically, are all kind of down to censorship and thought control
Right.
patterns.
That's a
Like,
yeah.
we don't want people to realize that, you know, you can get together secretly with your friends to try and band against this thing you don't like. We don't want you to rebel in any way. Don't read this
Yeah.
book about the dangers of people not letting you read books, sort of
Right.
thing.
It
And
is.
like, well, you know, okay. And here we are talking about it.
Well, but it's insane. It really is funny because, like, besides that, I mean, I think they say there's some maybe some strong language, but I don't even remember anything like of substance being used in this book that made me say, oh my goodness, they used a curse word. But everything else, especially, you know, when you look at the research that Craig has done, or Craig's friend for that matter, it's all pretty much, like you said, oh, you know, disturbing content, fear of inciting rebellion, concerns about misrepresentation. I'm like, okay, so who, Craig, are we with the thought police here? What are we doing here? Because it's like, yeah, let's ban this book because we don't want people to know that you can be controlled this easily. And it seems to me like that would be the that'd be a dumb, I don't know.
I think I think the irony meter for this sort of a thing only goes deeper into the red later when we go to cover Fahrenheit 451 and okay. we talk about people burning book, burning the book that is about people burning books.
That's
but other than that, yeah. this is like the vice president of banning irony right here, 1984.
That's funny. That is funny. Well, I mean, not to skip ahead, but I do want to let you know that that is the next book on our banned book series. So I hope that,
oh, yeah.
Hopefully it's not as dark, but we'll find out soon. We'll find out soon.
That is another dystopia that I actually enjoyed.
Oh, good.
And you can pardon the pun or not, but I'm actually pretty fired up to read that.
Look at that. Pyro guy coming straight out of him. All right. So we kind of know why it was banned and why it's also required reading, in my opinion. I've heard of 1984 forever, so I wanted to see if there was anything of substance that, you know, came out in pop culture that would make this, besides it just being a book that was on our shelves for years that Todd later read, what else could we think of that might have been mentioned? And I mentioned it earlier. The only thing that really reminded me, and I don't necessarily know, I believe it drew influence, was like the Hunger Games reminded me of like what this could be. Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing in pop culture that I 100% was like, this reminds me of what, you know, watching all the Hunger Games. I'm like, I could see this being some kind of whacked out crazy, maybe even just from the visual. Do you guys have anything in pop culture that you guys have witnessed, you know, or noticed or would like to bring up that might have some significance?
Well, I don't know that I would call this significant, but obviously there's a whole TV program called Big Brother that is about a house people live in with cameras.
I never even thought of that. Never put those two together. Literally never put that together. That is, that has to be like number one on the list of like things that make sense.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're as, I mean, but then again, they do like all types of punishments that make you eat like a thing called slop. That's interesting. And then they use what you say against you in confessionals. Interesting. All right.
As long as they leave the rats out of the equation, I'll allow it as a television situation.
I don't know. I kind of think it would be better television. Bring in the rats.
Jeez. Like, I knew it came out, and I've just never been that big into the reality TV situation anyway. But, yeah, no, that's a big one, Eric. I mean, I guess my perceptions on this might be a slightly different than y'all, because, I mean, granted, I was only 9 when 1984, the actual year 1984 came around. But it was quite the hubbub, you know, like you do when somebody writes some science fiction that takes place in the future.
Right.
And then that date comes around. You've seen how it goes.
Sure.
You know, like that was pretty interesting. And that's where I got a lot of my exposure to it, you know, years before I actually read the thing. But one of the big ones, and still, I think that when you mention 1984, you know, Eric, you talk about the black and white movie playing in your head
right
while you're reading the thing. My black and white movie always has like the opening credits of the Apple commercial from like 1984.
Okay.
If you're familiar, you know what I'm talking about. If not, mm-hmm. Google it. I think it came out during the Super Bowl. It was, they were just releasing, was it the Macintosh, I want to say?
Yes.
And it had, and it had all these, you know, brain dead clone people sitting in this auditorium, like hailing this giant face on the screen of Big Brother. And this woman comes along with a sledgehammer and smashes the screen. And it's iconic, very memorable. And just whenever anyone brings up 1984, that's the scene I kind of picture.
Right.
And I think I might attribute some of my disappointment with the actual book to that commercial, because the commercial, this lady shows up and she smashes a hammer through the thing, breaks the whole system. Like, it kind of gets a happy ending. That, again,
you're wrong though. And here's why.
It's been forever since I've seen it. So please.
No. You have to follow the logical conclusion of this. The Macintosh is introduced. And then over the years, they build up this brand where they sell us these pocket computers that we walk around with that have ruined our privacy.
Mm-hmm.
We have no privacy thanks to Apple.
Look at this.
And I realize we all willingly say, oh, I want this feature and I want this phone and I'm going to do this thing. And I don't care that I'm slowly giving up my individual rights to any sort of private thoughts, searches, feelings, yeah, etc. Because you know what? Whatever we've talked about today, I'm going to get Instagram ads about, because my phone is always listening to me, no matter what I try and do to it. And I've just accepted that this is reality. So I'm already in a bad spot. And
you make a good point. I never really realized that, you know, Apple would become Big Brother.
That's
with the surveillance. I feel a little dumb now.
Well, from a story arc, Todd, I think it's kind of genius. I mean, from a storytelling perspective, like, why not just start 1984 and brainwash all of us into that? So it's, you know, in a real reality, it might not be great, but maybe one day they'll write a book about this. Maybe we can, or just record a podcast for that matter. Well, I will tell you guys, I looked it up. In 1984, there was a movie, 1984, and the cover art does not give it justice to what I would make as like the cover art, but it does look like there was indeed a movie based on this made in the year 1984, and John Hurt was the Winston Smith. Now, John Hurt also, I know him from Doctor Who fame. I don't know him for much more than that, but it might be something worth watching at some point in time. But I just expected a much better cover photo than what I'm seeing. But this was done in 1984, and you know, art for movies were done a certain way. So, but
indeed,
I think we talked a lot about the themes, some of the reason it's banned. I mean, the fact is surveillance, privacy. We just talked a lot about that and how we Apple has done this to us as well. There were a lot of cool things, in my opinion, or at least they gave terms to things that, like doublethink. It was kind of interesting. The whole ability to hold two contradictory beliefs simultaneously. Interesting enough. Things like that I thought were quite interesting. I thought their whole newspeak, and especially at the end, I think there was like a amendum or a glossary or whatever that then explained how they chose words. Did you guys go that far in the audiobook to actually listen to that part?
I think I got to the end, like where it says the end, and I'm like, cool, this is done, I'm out. Because I feel like I remember there being some sort of additional things. And, you were listening while you were cleaning your garage. I was listening while I was, organizing my storage unit. And I'm like, yep, nope, I'm done. I can focus on this now.
Right.
So did you enjoy any of that, Abby?
Yeah, I listened to it as well. And I did think it was a nice little addendum to the book.
It was quite interesting. I think I started appreciating the world building and the thought that it would take into creating like your own semi-language. And I'm like, as an author, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I don't know. But that's kind of like thought it would be the same situation of like, all right, Luke has created a whole new language for Jabba the Hutt, and that makes it cooler because you're like,
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
The last book in the Lord of the Rings, there are multiple appendices that like give you the runic languages, like that get into that depth. And I read those and I enjoyed those.
Yeah.
I was just 1984 out by the time that came. And I was like, yeah, maybe later. And later never came.
Don't get me wrong. It got a little redundant, but having to explain. And I also think from a storytelling point of view, I thought it was really interesting when Winston got the book. And then from that would read the, and then they were like, well, he's going to read it to Julia. And I'm like, oh, well, that's a good way for us to see what's in the book, as opposed to giving like an amendment where we have to read it ourselves. I'm like, all right, well, that was a clever enough way to do that. And that was kind of the most impactful when he started reading their actual book of this is how it works and this is that and so forth. And I'm like, wow, you got a lot right there. You got it pretty much dead on in many aspects. So to wrap up, in my opinion, I think it was, once again, it's a one reader. I'd probably watch the movie to see what it was, but I don't think this is something you want to wake up every day and say, let's read some 1984 to feel good. I almost feel like this, in irony, will be the most downer. Maybe not. It's definitely not the most happy podcast we've ever done.
No, there's very little joy to be had on this one.
No.
Abby, do you have any other thoughts you'd like to share, outlooks?
My final thing is I just want to encourage people to think critically and develop media literacy. And I think as we head into a time where you can't trust photos and videos in the way that you previously could, we need, as citizens, to be scrutinizing information, engaging in the protection of democracy, upholding critical thinking as an important skill, because I think it's going to become more and more necessary. End of soapbox rant.
I would agree. I really wish that there were some way to teach this sort of thing in school. That would actually work. It, you know, almost like if they could sit the kids down and like make them read a book that would foretell of this sort of doom. If there were some way to make that happen, we might be in a better position.
Called required reading, and it doesn't happen until you are 20 years after out of high school. It's just when you actually are like, I'm interested in hearing what this is. But I do think this would be a good book in which everyone could, you know, give it a try and understand, at least be enlightened. And whether you choose to like not care, that's up to you. That is your right. But at the end of the day, at least be aware of like, hey, what's going on everywhere. And that doesn't just go with, I mean, that goes with everything you do, whether it be advertising, whether it be, you know, social groups, peer pressure, all the above, like, you know, make your own decisions, don't let other, and then just understand the system. And I think that was kind of the thing. The system itself is created in many ways to try to get you to do what they want you to do. And if you're at least enlightened and aware of that, the more people that you can kind of touch along the way and or at least, you know, enlighten them, I think the better chance we have to truly live free, I guess. So there was my rant soapbox. But I enjoyed the one time listening of 1984 and happy that it came across this list.
Yes.
Yes.
And leaving us with something of a note of hope. Good job, guys.
There we are.
Excellent.
There we are. So
great. Well, let's wrap this up so we can go vote since it's voting day.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Sure. Fantastic. Well, thank you, Abby, as always, for joining us for Banned Book Club. Look forward to...
Thank you so much for having me.
...the next one. Thank you, Eric. Please pass my thanks along to Craig for his research. We'll go ahead and say that he's made up for the serial bracket debacle.
There we go.
Thank you, listeners, for hanging in there. And until next time, I hope y'all have a good one.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Toddcast Podcast.
If you have comments, questions, or topic ideas you'd like us to chat about, you can reach out on social.
Search for Toddcast Podcast.
Visit our website at toddcastpodcast.com with a single D in Todd.
There you will find show notes, original articles, and a backlog of episodes.
If you'd enjoyed this episode, please feel free to share with your like-minded friends.
Perhaps you would consider subscribing, following, or marking this podcast as a favorite if you've not yet done so.
And of course, reviews and ratings on Apple Podcasts are appreciated.
Thanks again for listening to the Toddcast.